Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
I'm Gary Noel, and indeed I am back in New York City after 3 months on the road, completed filming a very important documentary that's in the final stages of post-production and will be released in the near future. Today, we're going to talk about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Could a plant-based traditional Chinese medicine diet aid in the treatment? Well, according to the Academy of Chinese Medical Sciences, yes. Tell you more on that. Apple and lettuce can remedy garlic breath, so says Ohio State University researchers. Also, fighting the aging process at the cellular level, from the University of New South Wales, that's in Australia. And then chokeberries have benefit on heart health. This is from Turku University, the University of Helsinki in Finland. If you're not familiar with it, the chokeberry is a you can get it dried in the United States or as a powder. Very good for you. And also today, something I'm going to spend a little more time on than the other stories, and that is, we assume that when a physician is giving a treatment that is based upon fully vetted, proven scientific practices, there's science behind it. Well, not so much. Prevent Disease has done an exemplary job, and I commend them on this, as they normally do with all their work. 1,500 common medical practices are categorized as having, quote, unknown effectiveness. 1,500? That's virtually half of all medical practices. So half of everything that they do has no proof that it works. Then why are they doing it? So we'll discuss that in depth. And that will begin what I'll be doing the rest of this week, and that is talking about how much bad science goes on out there. And in fact, we'll do a special report later today called Why Bad Science Persists. And it does. Then from our audio clips today, I found the last lecture of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I thought it would be important for us to be reminded of how insightful, how prophetic this wonderful human being was to us. And if only we would have listened, more of us listened. Because today, I do not believe that he would vote for any of the candidates, with the possible exception of Jill Stein. So we're going to take a look at this. Then we're going to hear from an Irish lawmaker, Claire Daly, who talked to her parliament about what it means to be hypocritical when it comes to the United States and stop being a lapdog of the United States. And it's a very powerful, short discussion. Also today, lying politicians, why they can't explain where $9 trillion went missing. And I was talking with a person on a plane, a stranger that I just, you know, was, they were kind of eavesdropping in on my note writing, and my I write my commentaries whenever a free moment, and I, he said, so you're writing about Clinton and why Clinton shouldn't be president? I said, yes. I consider her the most dangerous person on the planet and the most dangerous person to ever run for president. Why is that? And so I began to list the things that I was opposed to. And I said also, one of the big things that the African American and Latino community and the Native American community should be concerned about is her husband's legacy of creating a prison industrial complex that rivals the military industrial complex for wanton greed and using the minority population as fodder to fill the prison cells. After all, when you have a contract with the state and you have to have so many beds guaranteed to be filled because they make their money on how many people are on a cell, they charge per the day, they give them crap at every level, and there's no rehabilitation effort, there's no humane efforts. And I said, so Think of how many tens of millions of American family members have been affected by the more than 7 million Americans who've been in the prison system. How many of those were for non-violent drug offenses, even using a small amount of marijuana, even the search and seizure laws where you've done nothing wrong. It is not against the law in New York State to carry a small amount of marijuana, but if you put it into the public view, it is, and the police say, what's in your pocket? Empty out your pocket. And if you say, well, I have some marijuana in my pocket, you empty out and show the police your marijuana, you're arrested for that, and you can go to jail for 7 years. Well, what if you have a family of five? So there's consequences, and I'll get into that in greater depth later. But one of the things I said was, you know, the CIA was dealing with drugs all along. This person said, no, they weren't. I said, yes, they were. I said, listen to my show today, and I'll prove 100% conclusive proof that the CIA was one of the major, major traffickers in drugs in the United States. I will prove it. Now, I'm a scholar. I'm a PhD with graduate honors. I'm a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years. I'm a professor over at Fairleigh Dickinson, adjunct in sciences. I've written over 200 papers, over 700 articles. So I'm not going to say something if I can't support it. He said, well, I'm going to be listening. This was a lawyer, by the way. And he said, you prove to me that the CIA was engaged in drug smuggling. And I said, I'll do better than that. But I didn't tell him what that better was. So you'll hear a two-minute discussion today of how we absolutely, positively can show that Gary Webb was right, the New York Times was wrong, the Los Angeles Times was wrong. These were the bullies who had qualified journalists who chose to be completely biased in how they handled this. So we'll deal with that today. So you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Oh, and Greg Pallast, one of the finest journalists anywhere, will be here. And I'm going to be asking Greg about Hillary Clinton specifically. And as we all know, Donald Trump is simply a person who's unique in this sense. He actually stopped all growth, intellectual, emotional, at age 14. So what you have is you have a young adolescent boy in a man's body with a young boy's intemperate brain. He just can't help himself from saying the most ridiculous and stupid things of being anything anyone wants to be as long as they accept him. But Hillary Clinton's a different person. She's highly educated. She's very brilliant. She is a person who knows how to bob and weave in any fight. But that doesn't mean because she is still left on her feet at the end of a battle that she deserves the victory and the rewards go with it. So I'm going to be asking my friend and one of the great journalists, Greg Pallast, what he thinks of the Clinton legacy. Because you got to look at them in a larger context. You can't just say, I think this about Hillary. I like their personality, so I don't. That's irrelevant. Whether I like someone's personality, whether or not they're having sex with every other person that ever lived, is irrelevant. That is not important. What will they do with the power that they have been given when they're in office? That's relevant. And then we have to go back and see what did they do with the power that we gave them. So we have a track record here. Let's not be blinded by our emotions. Dementia and Alzheimer's disease. These are epidemic and they're going to become pandemic. Why? Because we have over 100 million Americans over the age of 40. And a lot of those are now suffering from memory loss and with that dementia and then Alzheimer's. We say there's only one or two drugs to help manifest a lessening of the symptoms, but nothing that reverses it, slows it down, or cures it. First, that's not true. There's a lot that we could do and have done in actual clinical studies. Later in this, maybe the next 2 weeks when the final independently reviewed results come in from this three-month study that dealt with brains as well, I'll show you the progress. But here's what a new classical Chinese medical text that was looking at 1,500 separate references on memory impairment, similar to Alzheimer's disease, and what happened when they gave him a plant-based diet with herbs. And this was published by the Academy of Chinese Medical Sciences. And it was done through a provincial hospital of Chinese medicine. And they found that there's over 1,000 Chinese medical books dating back to the 4th century that talk about plant-based diets. In an article entitled Memory Impairment, Dementia, and Alzheimer's Disease in Classical and Contemporary Traditional Chinese Medicine, the authors describe how people have suffered and what to do to eliminate that suffering. And then I was looking through some of the criteria, and they're right on point. Panax ginseng, the different herbal formulas, we know today from good chemistry that they work. They make a difference. So it is always wise to look at the wisdom that has been there for thousands of years on billions of people collectively and say, what can we learn from that wisdom? Now, it may not be a patented drug, but it is the diet. So when you give a plant-based diet, a healthy organic diet, with lots of fruits and vegetables and root vegetables, and fermented foods, which we never ate in the United States outside of sauerkraut, but they've been eating fermented foods almost at every meal. And we never had green tea in America. They drink green tea up to 6-7 times a day, loaded with polyphenols. They have anti-inflammatory nutrients that they consume, like miso soup. These are anti-inflammatory. So they got it right. Now, apple and lettuce can remedy garlic breath. And we've known that parsley would do that. But a study published in the Journal of Food Science found that eating a raw apple or lettuce reduce garlic breath. And that's easy enough to do. And you don't have to heat anything. We also know that raw mint leaves, chewed, and green tea, consumed immediately after a garlic meal, will help substantially dilute the what are called disulfides, or anal mericaptan. These are all the ones that are good for you, but cause the garlic smell afterwards. So have some mint leaf, or have some green tea, or have a fresh apple, or some lettuce. Fish oil can improve your mood if you're a veteran, and especially if you're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And this is from Texas A&M University, and they did this study. Quote, we looked at how physical activity levels and performance measures were related to mood state and resilience. What we found was that the decrease in physical activity and the concentration of fish oils and omega-3 in the blood were all associated with resilience and mood, meaning improved mood, better resilience. So if you're a vet, the omega-3 fatty acids, 2,000 milligrams a day. And from the University of Reading in the United Kingdom, scientists at the University of Reading report that a single glass of flavonoid-rich orange juice may boost cognitive function compared to a placebo. This was published in the European Journal of Nutrition, and it was just a regular glass of fresh orange juice. And it improves significantly attention, executive function, and psychomotor speed in healthy middle-aged men without mild cognitive impairment. And it lasted for about 6 hours after they consumed it. And that was against a placebo. Quote, it says that the cognitive test and the orange juice made a difference. And that's all we care about. So a glass of orange juice, fresh organic orange juice, of course, can make a difference. And combining two polyphenols inhibits tumors by 60%. Now, the polyphenols are the nutrients in certain plants, mainly in fruits, and a lot of them are in pomegranate and blueberries and raspberries. And this is what they say, quote, combining polyphenols and other compounds dramatically increase their ability to fight cancers. And this was at the Rath Research Institute. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. And, quote, one of the major problems with using polyphenols as anti-cancer agents individually is their poor bioavailability in the human body. In addition, their interactions with other natural compounds in the diet may hinder or complicate consistency of their efficacy. But with this, it made a difference. And here's what they said, EGCG. Well, EGCG, that's green tea. So how many studies are in it? There are hundreds of studies on the power of green tea, especially green tea and cancer. And it inhibits the cancer cells from growing or binding to a specific enzyme. So green tea, which has the EGCG, can make all the difference in the world. And separately, they found that the flavonoids can protect against heart disease. So they also found that by mixing the following, it made a difference in with cancer. Green tea with quercetin, that's Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, also vitamin C, L-lysine, proline, arginine, N-acetylcysteine, selenium, and copper. Taking all those together in a drink makes a big difference. And green soy extract could help cognitive dysfunction. University of Shizuoka, quote, intake of the green soybean extract could help reverse cognitive dysfunction and its associated accumulation of beta amyloid proteins in the brain. Why is this important? Because what happens when mom and dad or the grandparents begin to lose their memory? It's a buildup of the beta amyloid proteins, and that causes stunting condition in the brain and leads to Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. So we want to take green soy extract if we're losing our memory or have even advanced memory loss into dementia. This was published in the journal Functional Foods. And 1,500 common medical practices are categorized as having unknown effectiveness. I am opposed to all state medical boards because in my career I've seen how the state medical boards were used as the attack dogs to any physician or dentist wanting to do holistic dentistry and take out the silver mercury fillings and put non-reactive natural compounds in the mouth instead. Remember, 52% of your filling, silver filling, your silver filling is actually mercury, and that leaches into the mouth. Well, you do that, and suddenly the state board medical ethics is on you. If you want to use chelation therapy for over 30 years, you were attacked and brought in. All the doctors I know, Warren Levin and Robert Atkinson and Carl Humiston, all of them were brought in, Robert Giller, who were using chelation therapy. Now, it was not harming anyone, and they were getting phenomenal results by getting rid of heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, and helping people. State didn't care. You're not using common medical practice. That's how they would nail them. Then I remember when people were using intravenous vitamin drips. The very first people using it got nailed. You're not using common medical practice. That's how they would always say. And if it's not common medical practice, it's not scientifically based. You have no idea how many doctors I did their research and prepared them for trial. And we won. In fact, we won a big case with a physician who was one of the quackbusters. In fact, I'd gone into his background, got so much information that he was disqualified as a so-called expert witness. And that doctor had his license saved. Today, because so many people in New York State supported a freedom of practice clause that took us 10 years to pass, now at least when you go to a physician with your consent, he can use or she can use a modality that is non-invasive, like chelation. Once medical treatments have been dubbed standard of care, they tend to persist regardless of efficacy. Now, according to Prevent Disease, preventing untested practices from becoming standard care seems simple. All you do is test them. How many times have I said that after spending 14,000 hours studying all the scientific literature in the world on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, I have come to the decision that there is no such thing as a safe vaccine for every person and that the efficacy cannot be counted upon for any given person. And I got this information by reading the toxicological data and the immunological data. And not necessarily did I take it because of the patients, the victims, and or their parents. I wanted to see what does the science show. So I simply advocated this. Surely there must be a study where they took, let's say, a small number, 5,000 children, they gave them their full vaccines. They followed them for 5 years. They took another 5,000 children, they gave them no vaccines, but they followed them for 5 years. And then at the end of 5 years, they could say, well, here's how many diseases, which diseases how severe were they in the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated group. Then you know that the vaccines work or don't work. They've never done such a study. Well, if you've never done a true placebo-controlled with a inert substance, you can't use another vaccine against a vaccine and say that you've done a double-blind study. You haven't. Then how can you with any certainty? Well, there is certainty of their opinion, but not certainty of science. So that's why we are so victimized. So all the time we're finding out that there are drugs out there that are killing or injuring people, and we only find out it after the fact. Why? It depends upon who pays for the clinical trials. Not only do the special vested interest, the pharmaceutical industry, get to control all the initial outcomes needed to get drugs and devices approved, but once they are approved, little incentive to do the expensive large-scale studies that could potentially upend their initial findings and hurt their bottom line. The reality is the current medical mentality on pain management has spurred a multi-billion dollar industry for big pharma. However, studies show that long-term use of seemingly harmless over-the-counter pills such as ibuprofen can actually weaken your joints over time. And prescription pain pills, especially the opiates, have a well-established track record of causing serious damage, even death. You may recall the tragedy that unfolded around the FDA-approved painkiller Vioxx, which claimed as many as 55,000 people, though it's possibly over 400,000, before the FDA banned it. The Food and Drug Administration approved it in 1999, but later the manufacturer, Merck, was accused of concealing risks discovered in early studies. By the time the independent research showed that Vioxx increased the risk of heart attacks, 20 million people had prescriptions. It was withdrawn voluntarily in 2004, but not before, causing 140,000 preventable heart attacks. Merck pleaded guilty to criminal charges in 2011 and paid $950 million in fines. But no one went to jail. No one was held accountable. That manipulation of inappropriate adjusting, excluding, altering, or fabricating data is rampant in medical science. And more evidence is suggesting that peer-reviewed journals are increasingly having to retract reports due to erroneous or misleading data from doctors and scientists. Quote, the medical journals are filled with interesting ideas that get tested and fail. That's science. And that was from Professor Adam Sifu of the University of Chicago, who wrote a book called Ending Medical Reversal. The quote, the problem is that when new technology or treatment or surgery has actually gotten out and is being given to millions of people before it's found not to work, or, you know, it doesn't work, but it's too late. Quote, we spend so much time training people first and foremost in how the body works and how it breaks, so we get why things should work. And then we tend to adopt things because they should work before we actually know, do they work, end quote. It's no small concern. Here's my point. The British Medical Journal, Clinical Evidence, the gold standard in all of science, looked at 3,000 common medical practices categorized, half of them, 1,500, is, quote, unknown effectiveness, and some is absolutely harmful. And so that means that you're a human guinea pig. Now, let me give you 10 instances where medicine and the state medical boards and the AMA and all the medical doctors in America were wrong who used these. And yet the evidence was there. They could have found otherwise. Here they are. These are major reversals, meaning it was in common use. Everyone used it. Everyone defended it. And then they found it didn't work. The whooping cough vaccine. The advice, whooping cough vaccines are the best way to prevent pertussis. The rationale, the pertussis vaccine is combined with other vaccines so a person can receive protection from several diseases with one shot. Millions of prescriptions. Reversal, yes, the OSMA Journal and the Journal of Pediatrics, the New England Journal of Medicine, the Journal of the American Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal found that the pertussis vaccine may cause lasting brain damage, increase the prevalence of asthma and wheezing by 50%, increase deep apnea, sleep apnea, 500% increase in febrile seizures and other adverse reactions, and in fact found that there was a high level of very serious seizures. So the CDC still says the best way to prevent pertussis is to get the vaccine. They're wrong. It was taken out. Hormone replacement therapy. I've been railing against this as long as I've been on radio. It's hormone replacement therapy is for menopausal women. And it was adopted in the 1940s. And in 2002, they found it increased breast cancer, heart disease, and stroke. Also, colorectal cancer and dementia. Well, it's still on the market, yet it is no longer scientifically acceptable, and yet it's still there. Remember the peanut allergy? Withhold nuts from young children, the rationale for a mature immune system's exposure increased allergy risk. And that's what we did. The reversal major study found early exposure to nuts actually decreased allergy risk. So new guidelines were issued in 2015. Surgery for osteoarthritis of the knee. The advice was surgical removal and smoothing of the cartilage fragments. The rationale, that thought to reduce inflammation and improve motion and decrease pain. And they were doing 650,000 of these a year. Several studies showed no benefit from this surgery over physical therapy alone. And the surgery is still common, though it's been completely disproven. And then cancer screening. The rationale is simple. Routine early screening detects cancer to intercept the disease. So they adopted mammograms and the PSA test for prostate cancer early routine in the 1980s. The reversal is medical screening and mammographies increase for breast cancer, so does death. Early stage cancers do not always develop further and many treated unnecessarily. The PSA test no longer is recommended in the U.S. Age for routine mammograms raised from 40 to 50, and I don't believe anyone should ever get a mammogram. You can get a sonogram, which does not put any ionizing radiation in your body and is still effective. Heart stents, stents for people with coronary artery disease and angina. The rationale was clear benefit in case of heart attack, so those with stable heart disease should benefit too. It was adapted in 2004. Reversal, shown not to reduce the risk of future heart attacks or death, and may actually cause harm. It's a common practice, but it's been discredited. Then there is the vertebroplasty, which is the injection of medical cement to fix fractured vertebrae. It was thought to improve spine stability and reduce pain. 750,000 operations a year. The reversal, although we now know the procedure is no more effective than a placebo, is still widely carried out. And even intensive blood sugar lowering for type 2 diabetes. The advice is diet and drugs, get long-term blood sugar metric, which is your glycated sugar down. And the rationale was started in 1997. But now the reversal in 2008 found that trying to keep levels too low increased the risk of death. So those are, and then also pre-implantation genetic testing was found not to work. And ear tube surgery, most often performed surgery in children. And yet, a review in 2014 found no adverse effect on long-term child development if surgery is postponed. But surgery which carries the risk of bleeding and eardrum damage is still common. So that's how it works. I'm Gary Nall. That's our Health Nutrition Report. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world, all the syndicated stations, the millions of people around the world who care about progressive issues. We are the number one listened to progressive radio network in the world, and I'm very pleased that you're passing on the information. By the way, we have a brand new website. look at it. I just brought in the top designer. It is so good. And you can see how all the changes. We now have a progressive commentary part of it and the latest articles. If it can help tell us the truth, it's up there. And we generally post over 100 a day, right through the day, even have people working at night to do that. So you're getting it before anyone else, and we're posting more each day than Al Jazeera, the BBC, and CNN combined. So, and ours is not politically based, ideologically based, just the truth. Tomorrow on our Progressive Commentary Hour, in the midst of our investigations into the PR machine of the genetic engineering industry and GMOs, we are uncovering a huge network that has never been exposed before. Universities, think tanks, PR firms, organizations doing nothing to disseminate proper information, doing everything for misinformation. We'll look into these players and how they managed to mislead the public about the safety and promises of GMO foods in agriculture. Our guests will be two of the main investigators in the field, Gary Ruskin, a founder of U.S. Right to Know, and who filed over 100 Freedom of Information Act requests to get this information, and Susan Malkin, named as one of the new visionaries leading the charge to better health, and also with U.S. Right to Know. That's tomorrow night on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, I thought it was appropriate that we listen to Martin Luther King's last speech. It's short, just a two-minute segment. But boy, was he prophetic.
Somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for rights. So just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around. We aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Shortly thereafter, he was assassinated. But how prophetic. Boy, could we use him today. And we would have a different world, wouldn't we? Now, I promised at the beginning of the show that I would give you absolute irreversible proof that the CIA was engaged in drug running in the United States. This had been denied for decades, every agency. Listen to who's saying this. This is the head of the DEA saying it, the head of the Drug Enforcement Agency.
Partly because of her controversial drug stand, President Clinton fired his Surgeon General. But there was more disturbing news in the fall of 1993 when a report revealed that the government itself may have been running drugs. The head of the DEA at the time, Robert Bonner, said that a ton of pure cocaine worth hundreds of millions of dollars had been smuggled into the United States. And he blamed the CIA, saying the agency had joined the Venezuelan National Guard in drug smuggling.
Let me understand what you're saying. A ton of cocaine was smuggled into the United States of America by the Venezuelan National Guard?
Well, they...
In cooperation with the CIA?
That's exactly what appears to have happened. Have anything set up?
Bonner said he was the only one who could have approved transportation of illegal narcotics such as cocaine, and that this shipment had entered the country without his authorization.
Let me put it this way, Mike. If this has not been approved by DEA or an appropriate law enforcement authority in the United States, then it's illegal. It's called drug trafficking. It's called drug smuggling.
Former DEA agent Levine said that equally shocking was the fact that for more than 30 years, the federal government had protected some drug dealers.
As officers in the narcotic war, we saw the political choice made up close and personal.
One example, Levine said, was during the Nixon administration when he was about to bust a major source of heroin.
And I was stopped cold, because that source were our allies in the Vietnam War.
Levine said this was not an isolated incident, that it had happened many times in his 25-year career.
If it was a question of supporting people who supported our economic and political philosophies in other parts of the world, and they happened to be drug dealers, as most of them are, we supported them and we protected them. We protected them by looking the other way.
And the drug dealers had another ally in the war, money.
That it has a corrupting effect whose tentacles...
So there you heard it. Head of the DEA and one of their top investigators for 30 years said that this was going on. Many of us knew it was going on. I was a friend of Gary Webb. In fact, I was with him when at Columbia University when he won the first of the Project Censored Awards, and he deserved it. And to this day, I do not believe that his suicide was a suicide, but that's my own personal belief, because I had many conversations with him. But someday, someone will actually do the story that shows the government's actual running of drugs and how much even the DEA makes off of this and the whole private industrial prison system. I want to read this. This is from Michael Sheldlock from Mishtalk. Most dangerous person on the planet today, Hillary Clinton. Now, a little preface. We just found out last week, and I broadcasted on this program, that one private PR firm run by a former Wall Street Journal person was placing approximately 3,000 op-eds a year in the most prestigious of journals, New York Times and at Washington Post, Wall Street Journal. And for any of us who have been activists our whole life to try to get one of them placed, forget it. The moment they see Greg Palast's name or my name, they're not going to publish it. So we publish it online, Truth Dig or other places. And and it was turned out that these were charged $5,000 each. So you give this company $5,000, they'll put your ideas up there. But what if you're a corporation? What if you're a Monsanto? What if you want good comments about you? What if you're members of the military-industrial complex? What if you're a neocon and you want to justify a war in Iraq? You need to have constant editorials going out every day. Money's not the issue. You don't care about money. You got billions, tens of billions. But you want the public on your side. So you load up the entire American media with op-eds. So on Monday, Hillary Clinton accused Donald Trump of giving, quote, aid and comfort to Islamic terrorists, and the terrorists use his rhetoric to recruit fighters. On fighting terrorism, she chastised Trump, quote, I know how to do this. Quote, I'm the only candidate in this race who's been part of the hard decisions to take terrorists off the battlefield. I've sat at the table in the Situation Room, said Clinton. Here's my counterclaim. This is from Michael to the New York Times. Clinton not only sponsors terrorism, she is a terrorist. I sent this as an op-ed to the New York Times. They rejected it. Quote, here's what he said. Irony of the year. The irony of the day, week, month, and year is Hillary's statement, I know how to do this. Hillary supported Bush's inane war in Iraq. Hillary supported Bush's inane war in Afghanistan. Hillary was the mastermind of the failed U.S. strategy in Libya. Hillary's the single person most responsible for Benghazi. Hillary supports President Obama's drone policy. There has never been a war Hillary did not support. The most surefire way to make a terrorist out of a non-terrorist is to kill an innocent child or bomb an innocent person's home. Doing so is sure to radicalize friends and family. There's nothing more un-American or unconstitutional than bombing other countries indiscriminately with no declaration of war and with little or no regard for the lives of innocent victims. Hillary Clinton supported those policies as Secretary of State. Hillary Clinton, like George Bush, like Dick Cheney, like President Obama, are all guilty of terrorism. If you disagree, please put yourself in the shoes of a mother whose four-year-old daughter was accidentally killed by U.S. drones. Envision your neighbor's house accidentally blown to smithereens by drones. Is it not terrorism because it's an accident? What practical difference does it make? In the eyes of the family of innocent victims, no words better describe such an action as U.S. terrorism. I guarantee that is precisely how you would feel if it was your son or daughter killed or your house blown up. On April 23, 2015, the New York Times reported, "Drone strikes reveal uncomfortable truth. U.S. is often unsure about who will die." Quote, Mr. Obama and his top aides have repeatedly promised greater openness about the drone program, but have never really delivered it, said the Times. Well, on October 20th, 2015, the Huffington Post reported nearly 90% of people killed in recent drone strikes were not the target. U.S. drone strikes have killed scores of civilians in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, the article emphasized. So how many terrorists did the U.S. radicalize in the process? How many innocent civilians died? How much compensation do U.S. pay? Sorry, that's classified information. Given U.S. drone policy, it's a wonder there has not been more terrorist incidents in the United States. One surefire way to have more incidents in the United States to accept Obama's plan to take 65,000 Syrian refugees. Hillary promises more of the same. And that's why I will take with me to the election booth on November 8th the information about what Hillary actually does. Joining me in studio right now is Greg Palast.
Glad to be with you, Gary.
And Greg is an author. He's a documentary maker and par excellent. And first, congratulations on your new film.
Thank you.
Give us your insight on Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and why 4 or 8 more years the Clintons would not be in Americans' best interest.
Well, I'm not going to tell you why be good or bad, because that's endorsing or dissing candidates, which I don't do. I'm a journalist. I can tell you that I've had some pretty tough investigations involving them. And on the Republican side, you'll see the film, I investigate Donald Trump's billionaires. Remember, Donald only plays a billionaire on television. He doesn't have that money. He's hocked up to his nutsack, sorry. But he's he's got billionaires like JP the Foreclosure King behind him. So I don't want people to say when I tell you about Hillary that somehow she's the devil and this TV fake is wonderful. But I'll give you some examples. Well, number one, Monsanto. I mean, the Clintons stuffed the FDA with Monsanto executives. And here's what they were doing. And I was, if you don't know Greg Palast, I was an investigative journalist for The Guardian. Now I'm with Rolling Stone. And I was at BBC. When I was with The Guardian, and by the way, I didn't eat organic until I did this investigation of Monsanto. And the Monsanto executives within our FDA were handing Monsanto confidential documents of the European regulators while they were considering whether to adopt certain regulations. And they were literally writing the positions of the U.S. and getting inside confidential information. She's all for putting Assange in prison. She's all for for keeping Chelsea Manning in prison. But her hubby and their cronies were giving secret government information to Monsanto Corporation. I guess that's okay. And one of the things I found out, for example, that our FDA was covering up with Monsanto is a study of BST, which is this hormone that's given to cows, ends up in your milk. And the study, the Monsanto study, 6 weeks of watching these cows after injection, showed everything was fine. But then some British researchers at Oxford, when I was in England, got the full study and said, oh, there were 4 weeks left off. And in the 4 weeks that were not reported, the cows had blood, urine, pus in their dripping into the milk. And this was hidden. And then Hillary, as Secretary of State, was practically the ambassador for Monsanto and frankenseeds. Now, that's just the food thing, but I was in Kazakhstan, okay? I was in Kazakhstan. I got arrested doing an investigation in the Caspian Sea in a place called Azerbaijan, which I call the, you know, it's a kind of subsidiary of British Petroleum. Totally corrupt. And the president of Kazakhstan, so-called the dictator, okay, journalists I knew. One journalist went to prison for 7 years. Another journalist supposedly committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice. Okay. Hillary Clinton goes to Kazakhstan. And then the president of Kazakhstan was named in a bribery suit, Nazarbayev, for taking $160 million from big oil corporations. And one of the oil men, who's a partner of British Petroleum, actually said, I have the receipts for the bribes because I have to, he owned 15% of these Caspian fields. He was billed for the bribes. And he showed me the bills for the bribes that he was given. And so the president of Kazakhstan, this gets to Hillary, watch. President of Kazakhstan was named in a federal indictment against one of the oil company executives for paying the bribe and another hitman, one of his bagmen. At Nazarbayev's request, his name was removed from the indictment. It only says KO2, Kazakh official 2. That allows him to jail any person in Kazakhstan for mentioning that he took a bribe because there's no record of it. It's just KO2. Everyone knows it's Nazarbayev. I'm telling you it's Nazarbayev. Okay, so Hillary takes care of Nazarbayev, keeps the deals going and in his pocket, so none of those contracts are canceled despite being the country being ripped off and all being bribery. She's protecting Nazarbayev. Bill Clinton shows up in the helicopter with a guy named Grouchy, who gets, Clinton talks to the president, Bill Clinton, after his wife's there, he shows up in the helicopter. After he talks to the president, watch how this works. He leaves, his buddy goes in and gets a exclusive contract for Kazakhstan's uranium. The guy gets the contract for Kazakhstan's uranium, gives a $30 million donation immediately to the Clinton Foundation. But that ain't enough. Bill Clinton, they're always talking about the foundation. They put a lot directly in their pockets. Bill Clinton was then hired by this deadly, bloodthirsty, vicious dictator to give a speech in Kazakhstan for which they paid him $500,000, one speech, Bill Clinton, after his wife, the Secretary of State, is protecting this dictator. It is such a lock. It is so beyond comprehension. Now, I could put this in British papers because they don't care. the ruling class there is solid. I can't get this into an American newspaper. I can't get this anywhere. And this is, they are so beyond the pale.
Where have you tried?
Well, the problem is you try to get it into the New York Times or others. I was just, they just chop you apart. That's why I'm with Rolling Stone. I'm in a rock and roll magazine. Now, it's a great place for investigative reporters, but why is a rock magazine doing all our investigations in America? The Washington Post, when I questioned that I'm an expert, I used to teach statistics, Gary. This is my field, okay? I studied economics under, of all people, Milton Friedman was my mentor. And I questioned the elections in California, the primary result in California. I'm looking at the numbers from the Secretary of State. They declared her a winner when 2.4 million votes were not yet counted. Over half the votes were not counted. Today, a million votes are not counted in California. And they said she was the winner over Bernie Sanders. And I questioned this. I'm not a Bernie fan. I'm really not. I don't care. And I got two vicious articles written against me in the Washington Post. So that's why I have to make movies with cartoons in them and movie stars. Because I can't go, or I have to be in a rock and roll magazine, or I have to report from BBC from across the water to my own country. Because God forbid you question any of these myths, whether it's the wonders of the Clintons and their wonderful foundation and how selfless they are, or you know that, or we go the other way with Donald Trump, the brilliant businessman, billionaire. if you try to tell the truth on America, or you talk about Monsanto, right, and the Koch brothers. Okay, I'll give you another one. Everyone talk about the Koch. I've studied them for 20 years. If, by the way, you listen to my film, I have a tape of one of the Koch brothers ratting out in detail the crimes of the other because they all hate each other in that family. It's a tape. It's the first time I've released it 18 years ago. One of them used to call me not necessarily sober all the time. Didn't know I was taping him. So we put this in the film. But let me tell you something. Yes, the Koch brothers are putting big money behind Republican Senate candidates right now. But where did Bill Clinton come from? How does a governor of Arkansas become president? He rode a horse called the Democratic Leadership Council, kind of the Republican faction of the Democratic Party. That's how Bill Clinton became president. Who started the Democratic Leadership Council? $100,000 from the brothers Koch. They gave $100,000 to Dole and $100,000 to set up Clinton. See, they don't bet on horses because they own the whole damn racetrack.
Craig Pelas, thank you for coming in and just giving us your update insight into Clinton and on the pay-to-play, because Geraldo Rivera last week was just outraged when Bill O'Reilly said, give me an... he said, Geraldo said, there's not a single incidence that you can prove of Clinton's pay-to-play. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, man.
My God.
he had to leave Fox and go back to reporting. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome,
for giving us those
Gary.
Examples. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.